I remember as a kid, a 14-year-old, blonde-haired, scabbed-up, sweaty, dirty, skateboarding kid that I loved the feeling of riding my skateboard down a hill. I loved the speed. There is a sound that the skateboard made, and the wind was blowing my hair, and all the work it took me to get up the hill made me hot and sweaty, but I so loved the thrill of going down this huge hill that I did it. I had an inexpensive skateboard. The problem with the skateboard was on the particular road that the hill was on that was extra rough, it would vibrate. And on the bottom of the skateboard, the trucks are what hold the wheels to the skateboard, right? And there's a bolt on there that if it's tight, it holds it so that those trucks are kind of stiff. And so when you go like this, the wheels just turn a little bit. But as I would go down the hill, the vibration would kind of loosen that up. And I used to remember I'd get to the top of the hill to tighten that back down again. This one time, I remember getting to the top of the hill. Some friends had come with their bikes, and they challenged me to go on the hill, and I forgot to tighten that up. Oh, no, he was right. I started off laughing. We were going fast, and about a third of the way down the hill, the board started doing this. And I said, oh, no, because I knew that there was a little corner that I had to go around. And if I leaned in the corner just a little bit at that much speed, I knew something bad was going to happen. At that point, when you're on a hill, on a skateboard, there are no brakes. You are fully committed. You're locked in. I was locked in. The guy's on the bike. And I wanted to reach out and grab a bike and tell him to stop. But as I reached out, he thought it was a game, and he pedaled ahead of me. I was like, no, come back. And he laughed and went further ahead. And the corner came. The fear grew. The fear and what I was afraid of was realized as the front did a hard turn like this, and I fought it back this way, and I fought it back that way, and then I couldn't save it. Off the road I went, into the ditch, down into the ditch. Skateboard's not designed for grass. It just isn't. It slowed down very fast. My body, non-contact with the grass, didn't follow suit. I went full speed up an embankment trying to run and catch myself. I didn't succeed before I hit my first tree. I was slowed a little bit by the time I hit my second tree. And by the time I spun into this big evergreen and got buried into it, my body came to a rest in the arms of this big tree. The people on the bike, all they saw was me zoom off into the woods. And they pedaled back up, and it knocked the wind out of me. I couldn't get any sound out. They didn't know where I was because I just disappeared. I was inside this evergreen tree, backed up like this, wedged in, can't say a thing, and then I started to laugh. And when you laugh without air, it was that. But I think it's how I got my air back. I was laughing. But to them, it didn't sound like I was laughing. They thought I was dying in this tree. And so they come in like this, and here I am all in the branches and going, And then I started laughing. They started laughing. And they said, let's do this again. And I was like, No. I love stories about me and my adventures. I'm sorry to have to share them so often, but I learn best from my mistakes. You know, I wish I was a better book learner. I keep praying, God, these life lessons are good, but allow me to learn from a book. Let me read from somebody else's story. Let me take their wisdom and make it my own so that I don't have to do that stuff. Because it hurts sometimes. And sometimes it scares me. And sometimes I don't know if I can get through it. So just put the book on my desk. Have somebody drop it off. You know, show me the part in the Bible I'm supposed to know this week so that, Lord, I don't have to learn my lessons that way. And I think he's up there smiling. and saying that I love you. I love you so much that I'll walk with you through this. That any challenge you face, you will know me more, know me better, and do more for me because of it. Get back on that skateboard, young man. It's like, okay, I will. And so today we're talking about one of my heroes, a young man named David, a young man who some responded to in a negative way when he said, hey, that guy out there that's yelling, he can't do that. I will take care of him. Because he was fearless. I want to be fearless. I want to be that 14-year-old kid on a skateboard at the top of the hill saying, I got this. I want to be fearless like David. You know what? I want you to be fearless like David. As a church, we are facing some lions and bears. As a church, there's a Goliath out there. And that Goliath is challenging us. And we hear it. And some of us are responding like the soldiers did, just looking at each other. You go. You got this, right? You go. We aren't understanding that if it's loud to us, if a challenge is hitting us hard and we're feeling like, somebody has to do something about that. There's a gap. The church isn't doing what it's supposed to do. This challenge, maybe, why is it so loud for me? I'm telling you now that God has prepared you for that challenge. You don't have to go alone. You have an army with you. You have a church with you. You have a family with you. But if it's loud, pay attention. If it's loud, step up. If it's loud, it's a call to you. So I'm going to read through the story of David and Goliath. And we're going to work through some of the things that I want us to understand today from what we can learn from the leader that is David. We're going to start in 1 Samuel chapter 17. I'm going to read for you down through verse 16. And so if you want to mark that down, if you want to read along, there's some pew Bibles. If you want to just listen, you can listen. But 1 Samuel chapter 17, starting with verse 1, going through 16. This is the story of David and Goliath. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socah in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes Damim, I'm not sure how to say that, between Socah and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill, the Israelites another, with a valley between them. So there's the picture. An army on this hill, an army on that hill, and a valley in between. And so each day, they would come from their camps, they would make their lines on these hills, opposite from each other, and they would look across at each other, and I'm sure that they were trying to intimidate the other side, and they were trying to look tough and organized and ready so that the other side wouldn't come and attack. This went on for 40 days in this story, okay? Every day they'd get up from camp, every day they'd go to their hills, and every day Goliath would also come. So I'll continue to read now. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. I believe it's 9'9" is the estimate of his height. He was a big, big guy. 9'9". He'd be in the NBA for sure. But he was a big guy. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves. A bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. His stuff weighed between 40 and 60 pounds, each piece of it. I mean, just really heavy, heavy stuff. And so he was a mighty, mighty man. In verse 8, it says this, Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Saul and his soldiers were dismayed and terrified. Here comes David, verse 12. Now David was a son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time he was very old. Jesse's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to the war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his and to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days the Philistines came forward every morning and in the evening and took his stand. And so for 40 days armies lined up, and for 40 days Goliath made the stand. And David would go back and forth between tending his flock of sheep for his dad and going to the front line to find word of his brothers for his dad and to bring them food. His dad would also oftentimes send gifts for the other people that were there. So David was the youngest. He was in charge of the sheep. He was a shepherd to a certain degree. And his 3 oldest brothers were off to fight the war. And so that's the setup for the story of David and Goliath. And so we want to explore what was David's response to these challenges, how others viewed David in a way that we might say others might view us or we view ourselves, and how did David view himself? These are things we want to look at. So first, David's response to the challenges. I love the part I'm going to read because he's arriving, he's given his brothers the food, he's standing amongst the soldiers, and for the first time, he hears Goliath come out. For the very first time, he hears these words, and he hears these words in defiance against his God. And he's looking around at the other soldiers, and they're just kind of standing there, and they are dismayed. And they are terrified. And there's nobody willing to make a stand. And Saul, the leader, is doing nothing. David, the youngest, the smallest. And it burns on him. He's like, this is not right. How can they say things against my God? Don't they know who he is and what he can do? Because you see, God has done some amazing things in David's life. David knows the power of this God, of his God. And what life has shown him through challenges, he knows. And so as he stands there, he's looking around and saying, well, what will happen if somebody challenges him? Will there be a reward for that? You know? And so he's thinking about doing this. So let me read the verse here. We're in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 23 to 26. I'm going to read these from The Voice, just as a way that it's more storytelling. Starting in verse 23 of chapter 17 here, it says, "And David talked with them. Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, emerged again and shouted his challenge to the men of Israel. This time David heard his words. When they saw Goliath, all the Israelites were frightened and retreated from him. The soldiers were talking and said this, "Have you seen this man who steps forward? He's trying to taunt Israel. Our king will reward the man who kills him with wealth, a royal marriage, and freedom for his entire family from the taxation and obligations in Israel." David is asking the people around him, "Well, what is the reward for removing this insult from Israel by killing this man?" I love those words. He's an insult to Israel. No uncircumcised Philistine, no unclean man can get away with taunting the armies of the living God. That is David's response to the challenge. He's like, this can't be happening. Why is there nobody? Is the reward not big enough? Isn't there enough offer for somebody to step forward? Don't we have a warrior that can step in there with all the people here in the armies of Israel? Isn't there one man who will step up? And the answer for 40 days has been no, right? And so David says these words, and people hear it, and others respond to it. And the older brother is classic. I think I've got that next here. Verse Samuel 17, verse 28, David's oldest brother, Eliab, overheard this conversation and became angry with David. This is in verse 28 or chapter 17 here it says. And Eliab says this, "Why have you come down here? Who is watching your tiny flock in the wilderness? Hey, you little insignificant kid, your little flock back home, your little sheep in the wilderness, who's watching them? Why are you here? Shouldn't you go back home and take care of that? Go back home and skateboard. Go back home and do your little thing." Right? He's like, he's angry because he's trying to be bigger than he is. And so it continues here. He says, "I'm your brother, and I know you." Right? "I'm your brother, and I know you. I'm big brother, you're little brother. I'm here with your other older brothers, and we haven't stepped forward. Who are you, little man?" "I know you," it says. "You're arrogant." And he says, "Your heart is evil." He thinks David is doing this for personal gain. He thinks David is there to mock them. He thinks that David is just trying to draw attention to what's going on as a way to say, "Hey, you guys are weak. You guys aren't doing what you're supposed to do." He's calling them out, and they don't like it. I can tell you, personally, if you are working in a company or working in a church or in a group of friends and you see something that's not right and you step up and say, "Hey, you know, I don't think that's right," people's response is not always good. They're like, "You're pointing out my weakness? You're telling me I'm weak? You tell me I don't know how to be the boss? You mean I don't know what I'm doing? You're calling me yellow?" What is it that you're doing? Go back home. You're being arrogant. I have to check myself as a leader to always listen with different ears. Why is this important to them? What hurt are they expressing to me? What am I not seeing? And try to really understand. We need to do that as leaders. His brother didn't do that, obviously. His brother was like, "Hey, you're calling us out. Who are you? You're arrogant. Your heart is evil. You've come to watch the battle as if it were just entertainment. You're here for fun. Your life is riding skateboards down a hill. Everything you do is for fun. It's all about you. You're the spoiled little one. Who are you to say these things?" Some more responses to what David said. In 1 Samuel 17, verses 31 to 33. When news of David's valiant words reached the king, Saul sent for David. So Saul heard that here was this young man saying these challenging words against Goliath and against his armies. David to Saul says this, Don't let anyone be frightened because of that man. I am your servant, and I will go fight with him. I love Saul's response here. Don't be ridiculous. You can't fight the Philistine. You're only a youth, and he has been a warrior since his childhood. You lack age and experience. This part hits home to me. How many times when I was younger because of my size, how many times because of my youthful looks, or how many times because I was maybe an outsider and I had an idea and I had seen something, wanted to do something, people said to me, listen, appreciate what you're saying, but you're really not up for this. This challenge, you see, if you understood how big it is, if you understood how dangerous it was, if you knew the consequences if you failed, you wouldn't be saying that. I know you're confident, but listen, I don't think you're up for this challenge. You know who says that? The voice inside my head. The voice inside my head. The one that says, this is too big for you. You see, you could hurt somebody if you try this and fail. You could be hurt yourself. Why don't you just go the easy route? Why don't you find a big person to do this? Why don't you find a real champion that has done this before? This giant is too big for you. Have you guys had those conversations? I mean, am I the only one? I mean, I hope not, but, you know, I'm sorry that you have those, because they're not right. That voice, that's not the voice of a God that's big enough for all of our challenges, who puts the lions and the bears in our path so that he can overcome them with us, so that we can learn, so that we can become fearless. What is the challenge that's right in front of you right now? We all have them. We all have them. We all have them. And you are prepared. The voice that says, don't be ridiculous. I hear that one. Don't be ridiculous. You can't do that. I said, but I know God can. I know God can. Because here is the reality. Courage is really just faith in action. It has nothing to do with your bravery. It has nothing to do with how well you know this or how well you know that, or your strength or your speed or your intellect or the way that you can speak. Look at the leaders who studied. Moses couldn't speak very well. You know, you look at Joseph and the life he had, thrown in a cistern, sold into slavery, put in the jail. All on the way, that voice could have said, don't be ridiculous. How can you be a leader of men? But God knows, and God is there. Your challenge, as big as it is, God is bigger. Let me read to you from 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 34 through 37. It says this, and this is David talking. I work as a shepherd for my father. Whenever a lion or a bear has come and attacked one of my lambs, I have gone after it and struck it down to rescue the lamb from the predator's mouth. If it turned to attack me, I would take it by the chin, beat it, and kill it. Yeah, right there, right? You know, that guy is awesome. He grabs it by the chin. It's my friend Butch who told me that one time he grabbed a shark and put his hand inside, grabbed it by its tail, turned it inside out. You know, that's the kind of story you want, right? I took that shark and I turned him inside out. It wasn't pretty. He had too much fish for lunch. It's gross. Anyway, so Butch would tell me these stories just like that. But in a lot of ways, this is David. I grabbed it by the chin and I beat it. This was not a chipmunk. It wasn't a stuffed animal on his shelf. And I can take on those all day long and win some of the time. I mean, I really can. Occasionally, I hope. Don't be ridiculous, saying, right? Don't be ridiculous. We know. We've seen the stuffed animals. You're no match. Where was I? I would take it by the chin, beat it, and kill it. I have killed both a lion and a bear. And as your servant, I will kill this uncircumcised Philistine too, since he has dared to taunt the armies of the living God. He understands what the challenge is. Do you understand what your challenge is? The challenge against you is a challenge that God can handle. If you don't have the faith that says God can handle that, right? God can. It may be hard. It may involve doing hard things. God can handle it. Don't let the enemies taunt the armies of the living God. You know what? You're in the army of the living God. You're in the army of the living God. Some of us might still be in boot camp, right? Some of us might still be in boot camp stage. Some of us might be the first stages. Some of us might be officers in the army, but we each have challenge for where we are. But we're all in that army. In verse 37, it says, "It's the Eternal One who saved me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will save me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said, "Go then, and may the Eternal One be with you." I love these words of David. He wrote them down in one of his psalms. He says this, "When struck by fear, I let go, depending surely, securely upon you alone." David, who had pummeled a lion and a bear with his bare hands, says, "I let go. I depend securely on God alone." And so he steps up and says, "I will fight this giant. I will fight this giant." So how did David view himself? I think he rightly viewed himself as insignificant. I think he viewed himself rightly in that he knew that when he fought the lions and the bears, that it was not him but God. I think he rightly knew that all he had to do was do what God told him to do. All he was step into it and God would do the rest. Could there be pain? Could he fail? Yes. Could there have been fear? Yes. But he had faith to overcome that. Faith is the antidote to fear. Let me read to you from 1 Samuel before I get to the verse on the screen. Verses 38 and 39 of chapter 17 here, they say this. "So Saul outfitted David in the king's own armor, a bronze helmet to protect his head and a coat of mail to protect his chest. David strapped on Saul's sword outside the armor and then discovered he could not move because he was not used to the restrictions of the weighty armor." David not said this, "I'm not used to these things. How can I attack an enemy when I can't even walk?" So he removed every bit of Saul's armor. He would fight the Philistine as he had fought those lions and bears. We sometimes equip ourselves with other people's armors. We sometimes see how other people overcome things. Some people read books. Some people do devotions and get inspiration every day and write verses on their fridge and they always have an answer for this. Some people seem like they're always in the right place at the right time and God just like, boom, miracle, awesome. You know, and so we want to be like them and we try to put on their stuff. We try to be like them. I've got pastors I think are awesome. I want to be like them. But I can't be like them. They do things that that's not how God made me. And so what I want you to know is you cannot put on my armor, nor your neighbor's armor, nor anybody else's. God has prepared you for all the different challenges, right? Uniquely. He knows the battles that you will face. He knows the battle that's inside of you. Which voice are you going to listen to? Who will you depend on? And so he takes off Saul's armor. And in verse 40, it says this. He took his staff in his hand and went to the stream to choose 5 smooth stones, which he kept in a pouch in his shepherd's bag. So there he is, his shepherd's bag. He had his sling ready as he approached the Philistine. That's it. You know, my conversation with the pastor the other day about life and about all the challenges he was facing. He's planted a church, and you know, it's tough coming into a new area and stuff like that. And he's talking about, you know, coming in, he thought he had to have this and thought he had to have that and all these things. And in the end, I just said, listen, you have a very powerful testimony. You know that when God sends us, that's all he sends us with, our story. Your story is going to save people's lives. Your story will open the door. Your story will plant a seed. Your story will water seed. Your story will help harvest. Your story is what you need. Seek opportunities to share your story with people. Time and time and time again, if you share your testimony, God will be moving and moving and moving. And that's it. Church is a structure. I love church. I love church. I love what church does and offers, and it's set up by God and it's ordained by God, and this church has work to do. But ultimately, you need to know your shepherd's bag is where you've been and what you've done. It's your little flock in the wilderness. It's your little flock in the wilderness, exactly where God wanted you. And God taught you the things there to face this new challenge. An interesting thing, if you were to read in 2 Samuel verses 22 of chapter 20, when it says this, and I love this part, because he has 5 stones, right? And he uses one on Goliath, and people say, why did he have 5 stones? Why would he over-prepare? What's the deal with that? The thing is, he knew, God knew. In those days, if you killed one person, their relatives would come after you. And here in this verse, in 2 Samuel 21, verse 22, it says this, all 4 of these great warriors were descended from the giant of Gath, but all of them were defeated by the skill of David and his men. So have you been over-prepared for battle? Yes and no. Yes and no. He will provide exactly what you need for your next challenge. So what I want us to kind of gather from all this stuff, one, tighten your trucks on your skateboard before you get down the hill. That's an important lesson. Don't forget that, you crazy people in the church. When you get on your skateboards, make sure you've tightened those trucks. I got the skateboard yesterday at the park. It was awesome for like 2 minutes. It was cool. I didn't die, so that's good. Here's the application. We should be bothered by the words that other people are speaking against our God. If you see something in church that's not right and it's loud to you, you are the church. You go and do that thing. You get other people and go and do that thing. You talk to others, but not in a way that they're going to hear you as arrogant or boastful or rude. But hey, this is bothering me because I feel a heart for this. What can we do? There's people in these neighborhoods. We saw them this week, right? We saw the little ones. We saw their families. And oh, my word, people. Oh, I love those kids. They're sweet, but they're not sweet at all. Right? They're hungry. They don't have a lot of discipline. They want the attention. They're starving for it. People, that's so loud. We have to do more. We have to do more. I'll just put that out there. Others may doubt your motives and abilities. Rely solely on God's strength. And by others, I mean you. You, yourself, and you. And others too, maybe. But really, you are your biggest doubter. Rely on God. Because you are fully equipped for battle today. You have a set of knees that you can get on and pray. You have a set of knees to get on and pray, and that's what you need. So, questions to ponder. Are we allowing fear to stop us? Just a question. Not a statement, it's a question. Are we allowing it? Are we prepared as a church to be a frontline church? You know what that takes? Putting on the armor of God, walking in His path, and paying attention to what He's putting in front of us. Thank you. I've been at camp meetings a lot the last couple of weeks, and one thing I love is at the end of the service that the altar is open. And it's open today. If there's something on your heart, something that you're working through, a life change that's happening, a health thing that's happening, a job thing that's happening, is there a Goliath that's right in front of you? Be courageous. Come forward. We've got the deacons and the deaconesses, elders that will be willing to pray with you. We have coffee and some snacks downstairs for coffee hour. So if you want to hang out and talk, that's great. We want to do those things. They'll be downstairs. But if you want a time of prayer, please feel free to come forward. If Jesus is speaking to you, if God is calling you, the Spirit is prompting you, please come forward. Let me pray. God, thank you for the things that you can teach us through the life of David, through his faith and his fearlessness. Lord, let us hear your voice and not the voice of the doubt. Let us know that it's you that will conquer, and that the challenge is really against you and not us. Help us be overcomers, Lord. Bless us this week. Show yourself to us this week in a powerful way. Give us a new boldness in your name for your sake. And I pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.